Hare Krishna, we welcome everyone. So we'll just briefly review what we covered last class, first class, 9th chapter. 1 to verses we covered, 1 to 3, right? So. Chapter is called Most Confidential Knowledge. Share what?
So, Lord Krishna says Arjun that because Arjun is not envious of him, he is going to tell him the confidential knowledge.
So, that is one of the criteria to understand the... So, what is this most confidential knowledge?
Why?
What is it?
What? Bhakti.
It's a devotional service, pure devotional service is more confident. Then everybody of us know about it, why it's called most confidential. It's open secret, right?
If you have to... Only
special souls will enter into that mood of pure devotional service, right? Because Krishna will not give it so easily. Then, what else? In verse number 1, he says he gives knowledge as well as realization. Right? Realization, Prabhupada says in the purport, comes in association of devotees. We study these chapters in association of devotees, we get the realization. And what are the services and what are the different types of activities in pure devotional service? Shavanam, Kirtanam, there are 9.
Archanam, Vandanam,
Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma, Nivedanam. These are the 9 different activities as given by Prahlad Maharaj. So then Anusuyave Prabhupada says, because he is non-envious, unless one is non-envious, even we cannot comment on Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, we just, you know, it's Prabhupada says it's like licking on the jar of the honey. Mayavadis, you know, they don't really taste the honey. Then, in the text number 2, what is it about?
Glories of pure devotional service.
So, what are some of the glories?
King of knowledge.
Nobody remembers what does it mean, king of knowledge. Okay, what is most secret of all secrets? That's why it's called most confidential knowledge, right? Then other point is purest knowledge. So one point, can you remember among all the glories, which one struck you more or which one appealed to you more? Very, very
can
sweet.
Can happily perform.
Okay. So it's not like you're morose and somebody is like demanding us to serve Krishna, right? Voluntarily we are serving Krishna because we are happy. Yeah, some more points which struck you, appeal to you. It's one thing which occurred to me. For me, it's like it's directly perceivable. One can perceive the direct perception of self by realization. So as we do devotional service, we can know we are making progress. Nobody else need to tell. So it's a very important one of the characteristic actually. Then it's everlasting also. So it's not like this life is all in all. We can always continue wherever we stopped. Okay, then third verse. Now Krishna is talking about why if devotional service is so wonderful, then why people don't take it up. So then he is talking about the criteria of faith. Faith is very important. So unless one has faith, if he keeps having doubts, regardless of hearing from bona fide sources, if he still has doubts, then he doesn't make progress. Then he again comes back to the cycle of birth and death. So we need to have, but at the same time Prabhupada says blind following is not allowed, it's not better, it's not recommended. So we should have submissive inquiries. But once we made inquiry and once it's cleared off, we should be in a mood of receptive and open mood that the doubts gets cleared when we inquire. It's not that, still we have keep asking the same question 10 years like that. Yeah, actually there was one devotee, they moved away from Seattle now. So he came to Krishna consciousness along with me only actually. Yeah. Somehow, he liked more Rama, Lord Rama. And of course, here also he used to recite Rama and all those things also. And he's chanting 16 rounds and everything, and he has the sincere desire to take initiation in the parampara. But somehow he has these doubts, like so many doubts, finally he told that at least so far, I didn't meet anybody who is as scholarly as I wanted or something like that, some statement he's making. So much so much in mental, basically mental speculation, all those things, he's lost actually. So we prayed for him, we can pray for them. Like that, you know, just keep having doubts. He keeps meeting spiritual masters and challenges them actually, you know. Oh, in this, something he knows, he wants that exact answer from them. But he doesn't know the realization they have, we don't have, and they can train us to become like how they are. That's the mood we should have. It's not like I test, you know, I have this amount of knowledge, the spiritual master also has. You know, they may be familiar with different things. He is specifically looking at Ramayana proficiency. ISKCON devotees usually don't have Ramayana proficiency. We all are about Krishna, right? Some devotees may have it. But he is very much into Ramayana, so he Valmiki Ramayana, in and out he knows. So he wants somebody like that, match up to his level and things like that. Poor thing, yeah. Okay, so we'll go from text number 4 today, hopefully some verses. So here, text number 4 onwards till 10, Krishna is talking about Achintya Beda Beda relationship with the material world. How is he related to the material world? Achintya Beda Beda means what? Inconceivable. Achintya is inconceivable. Beda means
difference.
Abeda means
sameness.
Oneness or sameness. So inconceivable, oneness and difference. That's what we say. That is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. So Krishna is inconceivably, or this material world is inconceivably identical to Krishna. At the same time, it's different from Krishna. So how is it? It's because it's energy. The energy is not different from Krishna, so it's same. But at the same time, because it's energy, it's expansion from him. He is not him himself spreading out everywhere. So it's different. That's in punchline. But there will be more details how Krishna elaborates himself and Prabhupada elaborates himself. So we'll read text number 4. Mayatatam idam sarvam jagat avyaktamurtina matsani sarva bhutani nacham teshu avastita. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. So he's saying this unmanifested form, that is this avyaktamurtina. Avyakta, vyakta means manifest. Avyakta means unmanifest, murtina form. So by his unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. That means by his impersonal energy, like Brahman. All beings are in me. That means everything is consisting of his energy. Everything is made of his energy. But I am not in them. That means I am not lost. Right? It's said that it's like one tick, take one six stick and make 100 pieces. Right? So basically, the 100 pieces are born out of this one stick. So the one stick is lost, right? So it's as if Krishna expanded into all of us and then he is lost. It's not like that. Krishna is like, oh, that verse is there in Isha Upanishad, right? Om Purnamadam. Om Purnamadam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Vishishate. So Krishna, you know the English?
English?
The translation?
Translation from the whole. The whole comes, and when the whole is, when it's divided from the whole, it still remains the whole, and this is whole, that is whole.
Yeah. So even though complete wholes, very very sweet, the translation, the way it's given, I don't know word to word, but even though complete wholes emanate from the supreme complete whole, that whole itself is complete whole and he also remains complete. No, it's so sweet. He's emanating complete wholes actually. Basically universe is imagined, right? It's like a bubble. Everything is within itself. Everything is self-sufficient. Whatever it needs, water, air, everything, whatever is needed within the universe to sustain, it's there within the universe. It's not like the universe communicates outside some radiation, okay, send me some info. You know, it's not like that, right? So that's one example. Like that. So because even though like all the spirit souls who are Satchidananda are emanating from him, or you know, are being generated by him, he still remains on his own. Like, you know, he is not lost. That's another point Prabhupada is saying. Krishna is saying in the verse. So the first part of the paragraph, Prabhupada is saying, this verse is saying that we cannot understand Krishna from our material senses. That's one point which we are not going to read. So I'm just summarizing it. We cannot conceive Krishna through this material senses. So then he quotes his words, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena from Brahma Samhita. That means Krishna can be understood only when with an eye tinged with saw of love. That means with the love, they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So when the devotee has that love for Krishna, Krishna manifests himself for the devotee. Then, so that's one point, Prabhupada is saying that we cannot perceive him through his senses. Then we'll read the today's section. But still we can see how he is pervading throughout this material world. So continuing from, first paragraph in the middle, but actually, although we cannot see him,
everything is resting in him. As we have discussed in the 7th chapter, the entire material cosmic manifestation is only a combination of his two different energies, the superior spiritual energy and the inferior material energy. Just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation, and everything is resting in that energy. Yet, one should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, "I am everywhere and everything is in me, but still I am aloof." For example, a king heads a government which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. That is a crude example. Similarly, all the manifestations that we see and everything that exists, both in this material world and in the spiritual world, are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
We can pause there, Prabhu. Okay. So first part, Prabhupada is saying that we read in 7th chapter, there are two types of primary energies through which everything is consisting of, which are spiritual energy and material energy. So that's what we see, how everything is, so either we see material world or spiritual world, which is all made of Krishna's energy. So that's how Krishna is present everywhere, through his impersonal form. But then another point is saying is, even though he is pervaded through his energies, he is not lost his personal existence. That means he still is in Goloka Dham. He is having his own pastimes and leelas with his cowherd boys and girls, and his own rasa he is having. It's not like he is disappeared. So one example Prabhupada is giving of government. So the government energy is there in its all its departments also, right? Everywhere the same rules and regulations are applied. But at the same time, king need not be present in each of the departments personally. Through his rules and regulations, he will make sure his presence is felt in all the departments. Right? So same thing. The whole thing is set by the material nature. The whole thing is, Krishna just wills. That's what is going to be repeated later on. What is the role of Krishna in this material creation? No? How much he is involved? He is involved as much as his desire. That's all. He just desires material creation happens, it happens. That's how much he is involved. But at the same time, because of him, everything is happening. Without the desire, nothing happens. So, another couple of examples from the lectures which I heard. You can listen nicely. This point is very important to understand. So, Prabhupada is telling about example of Ford. Ford is a company, right? Car company. So, if you go to a factory, Ford factory, everywhere on each of the car you will see Ford. There are cars everywhere. The Ford energy is spread everywhere. But at the same time, if you want to meet Mr. Ford, Mr. Ford, you cannot go to the car and say, "Okay, Mr. Ford, can I have an appointment with you?" Right? That is ridiculous, right? You have to go to the person Ford who created this energy. Then you will be satisfied. Otherwise, you will not be satisfied. That's what he's saying. So there is a person behind this energy. That person is what we need to exchange our loving relationship with. Even though we try to, that's a good point. We try to squeeze out rasa from this energy. No, we'll not be satisfied until we meet the Mr. Ford and have a loving relationship with him. Meet Mr. Krishna. And another example he gives, same the Ford example, is that expansion, right? How a father expands into children, like he can create multiple children, but at the same time, it's not father is lost. Children exist, father exists, and there is loving relationship between them. Similarly, Krishna expanded, but it's not like he is lost. That's another point he's saying. Two couple of examples to understand it better. Okay, so everybody understands this point. Krishna, everything is pervaded by his energy, but still he is aloof, right? But still nothing happens without his energy. So now when we read the next verse, you will be more confused. Text number 5. Nacha matstani bhutani pashe me yoga maishwaram bhuta brinna cha bhutasto mamatma bhuta bhavana. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. So what's the point which is confusing? He says, yet, that everything that is created does not rest in me. First verse he said, everything is resting on me. Now he is saying, everything is not does not rest in me. Right? And then he says, why? You know, this is my mystic opulence. You know, we say, oh Krishna, we don't understand. He said, yeah, it's my opulence. You don't understand. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation. That means he has his existence in Golokadam, not in this material world. Because why? He is the source of this creation. So it's not that once this material world disappears, Krishna is lost. He is beyond this creation. That's what he's saying. So let's see what this point is. So this point here is saying does not rest in me means he is not personally holding up everything. He is resting on his energies but not resting on him directly. Prabhupada says example in the purport as if like we see an example of an atlas holding a globe. Atlas is one person, right? An old person holding a globe. So we see he is very tired and he is lifting the globe on his own. So we cannot imagine Krishna like that. You know, holding up all the universes on his own. He doesn't have any other work but just holding up. Right? You should not imagine Krishna like that. So that's what point he is saying. He is not personally holding up. His energies are holding him. But at the same time, his energies are not different from him. So still he is holding. Okay, so we'll read the purport which I paraphrased just now. The Lord says that everything is resting on him.
The Lord says that everything is resting on him. Matsthani sarva bhutani. This should not be misunderstood. The Lord is not directly concerned with the maintenance and sustenance of this material manifestation. Sometimes we see a picture of Atlas holding the globe on his shoulders. He seems to be very tired holding his great earthly planet. Such an image should not be entertained in connection with Krishna's upholding this created universe. He says that although everything is resting on him, he is aloof. The planetary system are floating in space and this space is the energy of the Supreme Lord. But he is different from space. He is differently situated. Therefore, the Lord says, although they are situated on my inconceivable energy is the supreme.
As the supreme personality
of Godhead, I am aloof from them. This is the inconceivable opulence of the Lord.
It's the same points, right? Whatever we discussed, it's clear, right? Mm. Now, why in the first verse he says everything is resting on him? Second verse he says not resting on him. Okay, so the way to understand this is his inconceivable opulence, right? That's the point, mystic opulence. So now we'll read the second paragraph. Fifth line down, he says, we may think of doing something. So, here in this purport, paragraph, Prabhupada is telling, so then if he is not really holding up, then what is Krishna's role actually? So, that's what we elaborated earlier. Krishna's role is that he desires it to happen, his will. That will is the one which causes everything. So, we'll see how powerful is his will in the purport. We may think of doing something.
We may think of doing something, but there is so many impediments and sometimes it is not possible to do as we like. But when Krishna wants to do something simply by his willing, everything is performed so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. The Lord explains this fact. Although he is maintainer and sustainer of the entire material manifestation, he does not touch this material manifestation. Simply by his supreme will, everything is created, everything is sustained, everything is maintained, and everything is annihilated.
We can pause there. So you see the point? So how is, that's why it's called supreme will. we desires, that means it's a fact already. It's not like, you know, we have so many desires, that's why Prabhupada is saying, comparing to us. We have so many desires, sometimes, you know, we take lifetimes to fulfill them, right? That's why we keep coming back life after life. And even if we have in this, you know, it takes so much effort to make it manifest in real terms, in tangible terms, right? Once it's, that's why it's called thinking, feeling and willing. First it's a thought, the desire, then you have to feel for it, or, you know, you have to think about it, how to do it. Once that's still in subtle level, right, then you have to act out it. You know, you have to get all the resources, you have to get the people involved, everything, and then do, and then it takes so many months or years, then finally it manifests something. But for Krishna, he just desires, okay, let there be material creation for all the conditioned souls, that's all, boom, it's there. Rampadmara says, boom. Immediately, you know, so many universes are emanating from the pores, he expands himself into so many Vishnus and goes inside three Vishnus, so many universes, and they are growing, Brahma goes inside, and then, and there's again, that, and imagine that life, that span of the universes are so big again. So much is happening just because he desired it to happen, and he's now no more concerned, you know, day to day. In this universe, did the sun rise exactly at 5:30, you know, whatever time sun rises. You know, he's not involved in the day to day things. But what is Krishna's concern in the world? Is Krishna bothered at all about things happening in the world?
He just wants
fallen souls to come. No, but that's true. He wants fallen souls to come back. But he is still receptive to something which is happening in this world. What is that?
Devotion. Love.
Yeah, exactly. So, he is hearing the prayers of the devotees from this world. He is not bothered about the, you know, materially how things happen. Like, you know, this earthquake happened, this hurricane happened. These are all happening by karma. What's going to happen? But wherever there is a sincere devotee praying out from him, for him, he is personally, you know, hearing that. He is personally reciprocating with the devotee. With so many universes, so in so many places. That's the difference. That's what his, you know, his interest is. His interest is in love. So, another thing I thought, you know, practically we can also think about it is like, for ourselves, like, you know, we have desires and it takes so much time to fulfill the desires. But within that desires, based on the quality of desires, sometimes, you know, the result depends on the quality of the desire. That means, if we have a sense gratificatory desire or desire which is not in favorable to Krishna consciousness, usually the net result is, what will happen? Frustrated, we'll get frustrated. Either hankering or lamentation. Either we keep hankering, oh, when will it happen? Or once we get it, we keep lamenting, oh, maybe that will go away. Right? You know, fearing that it will go away, or lamenting that it didn't happen. It's always hankering or lamenting. Or then it's ultimately frustration, material desires especially. You know, that's at least the lesson we learned so far in our, you know, experience in our life. But this thing, you know, we should all understand and hopefully realize that whatever we desire in Krishna consciousness, that desires will always be fulfilled, and there will not be any frustration for that. So if at all, you know, we feel, you know, this is kind of like our, sometimes people feel very, lack of morale, right? Whenever whatever they desire doesn't happen, they feel low self-esteem. They feel, you know, oh, I'm useless. I want so many things, still it's not working. They feel lack of self-worth. Then I felt this is so, you know, I was looking at profit kind of thing, right? Profit mentality. I think this is so wonderful. If I take up devotional service and if I desire something in Krishna consciousness, all my desires will be fulfilled. Then I will never be frustrated. That's so nice, right? Then I will always be positive. It's so wonderful, right? Actually, so I'll never be frustrated. All I have to do is desire in Krishna consciousness. That's all. And it may be, you know, so-called other desires also, but if they can be dovetailed in Krishna service, then I'll never be met with frustration. Like if I have desire to go to live in Vrindavan, that's the spiritual desire. Someday or the other, it's going to be fulfilled. As long as, you know, Krishna makes sure we are purified. That's the only delay. But otherwise, you are going to get it. If I have desire, like, you know, I want to raise children in Krishna consciousness, it's going to happen. If I have desire, I want to build this website, or, you know, I desire so many things. But it's very positive, I felt. No, it's very encouraging. No, it's not frustrating at all. Because these are all spiritual desires. So how Krishna's will is going to be fulfilled, like this devotee's will be fulfilled. Only thing is, it has to be more and more purer, more and more selfless. So, you know, the other thing is, sometimes we may feel, you know, I used to feel in initial stages of my Krishna consciousness when I was with my mentors. No, they were very, like, more advanced and more years of Krishna consciousness, right? I used to feel, suddenly they desire something, somehow it used to happen. Within, like, few days, somehow or the other, it used to happen. Then I used to feel, oh, here I desire something, and I have to keep waiting many years that something to happen. I used to think, oh, how it's happening for them, like that. So that then I realized, you know, it's purity, their purity and their surrender. They don't desire for themselves. They desire for the spiritual master, they desire for Krishna, it's happening. And after some years now, I was feeling little bit, you know, I made progress in my desires as well. You know, that now it's more, I don't have to struggle, like, you know, if I have an idea, I have to do it. I don't have to struggle for months for finding people or, you know, getting things, or still it's an idea is in the head. So I don't have to struggle like that. Somehow, you know, it just happens. I felt it's the, you know, it's amount of purity and selflessness in the idea. Okay, so then we'll go to the text number 6, where Krishna explains these two concepts with an example. No, because we don't understand properly, he is giving a practical example how to understand these two philosophical points. Yata kasha stito nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan tata sarvani bhutani matstani ti upadaraya. Understand that as a mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. See, actually, if you see, these verses are so difficult to understand. As it is, if you read, you will not understand what is this analogy, what is this verse, right? But if you read the purport, it's so clear, right? It's so easy to understand. See, if you see the purport, now you'll understand what exactly he's talking about. You know, why is he saying wind? Why is he saying about sky? What does it mean? We'll read the first paragraph.
For the ordinary person, it is almost inconceivable how the huge material creation is resting in him. But the Lord is giving an example which may help us to understand. The sky may be the biggest manifestation we can conceive. And if that sky, the wind or air, is the biggest manifestation in the cosmic world, the movement of the air influences the movement of everything. But although the wind is great, it is still situated within the sky. The wind is not beyond the sky. Similarly, all the wonderful cosmic manifestations are existing by the supreme will of God, and all of them are subordinate to that supreme will. As we generally say, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the supreme personality of Godhead. Thus, everything is moving under his will. By his will, everything is being created, everything is being maintained, and everything is being annihilated. Still he is aloof from everything, as the sky is always aloof from the activities of the wind.
Yeah, it's clear, right? So he's using this analogy. Wind is compared to the cosmic manifestation. Sky is compared to himself, Krishna. So how, even though wind is so great, it's still kind of, you know, it's limited by the sky. Or rather, it's under the jurisdiction of the sky. You can say, like, you know, it cannot go beyond the sky. So similarly, even though cosmic manifestation seems to be so wonderful and so, what is that word, magnanimous, magnificent, it's still happening under the will of the Lord. So it's under his direction. So it cannot go beyond that. It's not above Krishna's creation, Krishna's desire. So it's still acting under his direction. So how wind, even though it's powerful, he cannot go, yeah, same point, right? That's what he's saying, you know, sky is always aloof from the activities of the wind. Similarly, another point is saying, even though wind may do so many activities, can go there or blow here more, blow here less, sky is not disturbed by the activities of the wind. So similarly, even though materially, cosmic manifestation may go through so much churn, right? Universe gets created, universe gets annihilated, so much churn. And some bodies take birth, go, they don't take birth, so many things. But still, Krishna is not disturbed. Now, sky is aloof, Krishna is aloof. So whenever we think about analogy, we should compare always, you know, what is compared to what. That's how we should explain in exam also. No, better to write a chart if you can, like, you know, sky, Krishna, and wind is compared to material cosmic manifestation. How wind cannot go beyond sky, material cosmic manifestation cannot go beyond the will of the Lord. So then it's very clear. So the one similar verse which is quoted here, which Prabhupada is paraphrasing, is 9.10, where Krishna says, it's coming actually in a couple of verses. Just 2 pages later, it's there. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kauntena jagat vipari vartate. This material in nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So he clearly says this material energy is working under his direction. So example is given of... You know, generally scientists, this is a very crude example. Scorpion lays his eggs in the rice, normal rice we eat, right? So suddenly after some time, baby scorpion comes out of the rice. So scientists, they say, you know, rice gave birth to scorpion. So similarly, this material nature somehow in this universe, suddenly some baby is born. Right? But the scientists and so-called doctors, they say, actually, you know, material nature created this body. But they don't know the original seed is given by the scorpion mother into the rice. So similarly, original seed is given by the Lord himself. That seed nobody can create. See the point? The analogy is so nice, right? So that's what, you know, he is the supreme will. He's under his direction, everything is happening. Okay, so this purport is done. We can go to the next one. Text number 7. We are going to be done early, looks like. Sarvabhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadav visrujami aham. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature, and the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. So the same thing again. The how the universes, they get created millennium after millennium and they get annihilated. So we'll read the purport from second line. At the end of millennium means...
Four billion 300 trillion years. 4 billion and 300 million years of earthly years. His night is of the same duration. His month consists of 30 such days and nights, and his year of 12 months. After 100 such years, when Brahma dies, the devastation or annihilation takes place. This means that the energy manifested by the Supreme Lord is again wound up in himself. Then again, when there is a need to manifest the cosmic world, it is done by his will. Bahushyam. Although I am one, I shall become many. This is the Vedic aphorism. He expands himself in his material energy and the whole cosmic manifestation again takes place.
So same thing, we discussed this earlier, right? How you know, there are different types of annihilation. One, during the end of the day of Brahma, there is partial annihilation, right? Up till Brahmaloka. But otherwise, at the end of his lifetime, there is a complete, you know, whole universe gets, disappears, you know, dissolves into the body of Maha, and all the living entities get absorbed into the body of Mahavishnu. So that's what, that is the end of millennium, means end of life of Brahma. When all the universes get wound up, then again Vishnu has to glance. Then all the living entities, the whole material creation has to set again. So again it happens through his will. Okay, text number 8. Prakritim swam avastabhya visrujami puna puna bhutagramam imam krishnam avasham prakrite vasat. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. So again, he's saying it's all happening under his will. So we'll read the first paragraph.
material world is a manifestation of the inferior energy of the world. This has already been explained. In the creation, the material energy is let loose as the Mahatattva, into which the Lord, as his first Purusha incarnation, Mahavishnu, enters. He lies within the casual ocean and breaks out innumerable universes, and into each universe the Lord again enters as Garbhodaksha Vishnu. Each universe is in that way created. He still further manifests himself as Kshirodaksha Vishnu, and that Vishnu enters into everything, even into a minute atom. This fact is explained here. He enters into everything.
You can pause, Simataji. So that's what now his Prabhupada is summarizing how this whole material creation takes place in as three different Purusha incarnations. So first, the material energy is very inactive form. It's called Pradhan actually, where there is no differentiation. It's like one lump somewhere in the corner of the universe, a corner of the sky, spiritual sky. So then when the Krishna decides that universe happens, then first he lies down as the first Purusha incarnation, Mahavishnu. And then Mahatattva means it starts differentiating the Pradham into different elements. Then Mahavishnu, he lies down in the causal ocean. Then he glances seeds of golden seeds emanate from his pores. As he breathes out, golden seeds emanate from his pores, which are nothing but the seeds of the universes. Then when the soul enters the body, the body grows. So like that, he enters himself into each of these universe, seeds of the universes, as second Vishnu, Garbhodaksha Vishnu. And as he enters, then the universe grows, become big. Then after some time, within his navel, within the Garbhodaksha, in each of the universe, lotus flower comes. Then Brahma appears, then he sees everything is dark, then he creates the planetary system within that universe. Then that's 100 years of Brahma. After that, now all bubbles, everything again start disintegrating and get absorbed into the original Mahavishnu. For them again to wait until Mahatattva gets again agitated through the glands, and then whole universe gets started again. The whole creation. It's all described more details in Srimad Bhagavatam.
So the universe starts again, everyone again starts from the old age,
Not
old age, what do you call that?
Whatever stage their soul was in, however developed or undeveloped.
Like I was listening to Prabhupada's lecture, somebody said, we'll again be born naked. Will it be like again?
Evolution.
Will it happen like that or how is it?
No, it's based on wherever we are at last time, accordingly we'll get appropriate body. It's not like every animals. When we are in animal body, there is a certain, cycle, after this animal you have to get this animal. There is a kind of, based on evolved consciousness, there is a clear next life that's given already. It's there in the scriptures. But once you are in a human or something, for example, you can be born, let's say you quit this human body and you are destined animal body, always have to start from zero. There is anywhere, maybe in the middle you can jump in. Like that, and based on your disposition, there are different types of human beings also. It's not just birth in the earth. There are some number of demigods also considered humans. Until monkeys, they are also considered human. Like that. Like all these things, anywhere we could be born. So, that's point actually Prabhupada is going to elaborate in the next paragraph. Elaborating specifically on the point called automatically. This point is there, right? Avasham. Krishna says Avasham. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. So what is this point about automatically? Automatically means living entities are not doing anything for it to happen like that. So they are just part of the, they are set, they are thrown into that machine, Ferris wheel is there sometimes, or that also, or even these casinos. There is a round thing, you throw a ball, it just keeps going everywhere and goes into some hole somewhere, right? Just once it's set inside, you cannot do anything, right? It just had to go into its own course. It's like that. So Krishna just created the living entities, set the living entities into this material creation by his glands. But after that, it's automatic. He doesn't involve. At the same time, living entity doesn't do anything to cause it to happen. It's not like, you know, oh, I decide I will get this body. Of course, it's all based on our desires, but we don't have a choice. So we'll read then. No, we have time, right? So we'll read this next paragraph also. Now, as far as the living entities are concerned,
activities of different species of living beings are begun from the very moment of the creation. It is not that all is evolved. The different species of life are created immediately along with the universe. Men, animals, beasts, birds, and everything is simultaneously created because whatever desires the living entities had at last annihilation are again manifested. It is clearly indicated here by the word avasham, that the living entities have nothing to do with this process. The state of being in their past life, in the past creation, is simply manifested again. And all this is done simply by His will. This is inconceivable potential, the Supreme Personality of God. And after creating different species of life, He has no connection with them. The creation takes place to accommodate the inclinations of various living entities, and so the Lord does not become involved with it.
You know, some of the main points Prabhupada is elaborating here is, first is that, you know, it happens automatically. So the living entity has nothing to do with the process, you know, he doesn't have a choice also. And the other thing is, all different types of species are there to start with from the beginning of creation. So this contradicts the theory of evolution. They say initially it's all chimpanzees or some type of monkeys, and after that gradually human beings came and some species were not there at certain point. But Prabhupada is saying the moment creation started, different types of forms are already there. Because there are different types of living entity who want to take those different forms. That's another point. And another point is, He doesn't involve. Krishna is not bothering about, you know, this living entity will get this body, that living entity will get that body. It's all happening because of one's own desires and inclinations. So He is not involved with it. That means He doesn't get reactions because of that. That's going to come in the next verse. You know, it's not like Krishna chooses, okay, this living entity now, you know, has to get so much complicated algorithm actually, right? Has to get this body and, you know, already, you know, last life, this state, this was his consciousness exactly. So to that, I don't know who does this matching. And he has to get this type of body in this particular family and this particular, and exactly in this generation. It is said, I mentioned once, right? Whatever features we have right now, exactly that's what we desired. You know, if you don't like our nose, don't like our body, you know, our height or something, you don't have to. There is no, you know, nothing to regret, because it's exactly what we wanted to have. No, so it's all basic, but so mystical, no? How it all happens? It's so complicated, actually, so complex.
Flip side, it shows how little we, yeah, what idiocy we desire.
Yeah. See, we can't create anything actually, right? We cannot create anything. Even to have a child, we think so-called, you know, our children are produced out of us, right? Nowadays, it's become so difficult to, because of the polluted environment and because of wastage of, resources, all those things. Especially devotee families also, that's in another way why it's difficult for devotees, because Krishna wants to give a special child, so they have to purify themselves. But otherwise, it's so difficult. Some people, they struggle a lot for so many years and this thing, right, to have a child. But otherwise, you know, other side, you know, teenage girls get pregnant, they get keep aborting. It just happens. We feel like, you know, why they are getting children, like, and somebody wants so much children, they want to serve Krishna, they don't get it. It's all desire, right? They don't want, they are getting it. They want, they don't get it. So ultimately, our desire will not get fulfilled. We get frustrated. Yeah, so they're just burning their karma. They are not generating karma. So they just have to go, you know, after this animal, there is a sequence. After fish, it starts from the lowest, I don't know exactly, we can find it out, no?
Water animals,
yes, they are first. Mm-hmm. Then slowly land and flying animals, and then land?
Land.
And then humans, okay. So they have a sequence like that, you know, based on the evolved consciousness. Based on the number of things they can do with their body. See, for example, water, they can't even get out of water. Right, so like that, based on the freedom they have and all those things, there is evolved consciousness. So gradually they evolve their consciousness until they come to human. That's why human life is very, very precious, that because now we can make the exit, complete exit out of all this cycle. We can just, if we use this life properly and serve Krishna, do devotional service properly, then we can exit out of this system. That's the very, you know, important thing which we can take home actually, you know. That's, and especially we are so fortunate that we have been given this process, and where Srila Prabhupada is assuring us that, you know, just one life is enough. Just take up this Krishna consciousness. And he's not too much he's asking, right? Just following four regulative principles. Especially for Indians, it's so easy to follow four regulative principles. We don't even think, I used to wonder why somebody has to take a vow in front of spiritual master, in front of fire and the deities, you know, for four regulative principles, such a big thing. But in Kali Yuga, it's such a big thing. But Indians, hopefully, you know, they have good karma, goodness. What is that? Samskaras. So it comes easy for them, luckily for us. And then chant 16 rounds. That's all. That's the only thing is asked. So simple and easy. If you just somehow stick to it, then until end of life, if we can somehow chant our rounds, keep chanting our rounds, then that's all finished. We can go back to Krishna, exit out of this cycle of birth and death. Chanting, dancing and feasting. It's so easy, simple and sweet process. And joyfully perform, Prabhupada said, right? And Prabhupada said, what is the difficulty? He asks. He says something sometimes, then he looks at everyone, what is the difficulty then? Just tell me, what is the difficulty? Now I'm asking you, what is the difficulty? The difficulty is we didn't pull out the anchor yet, right? The boat is stuck. We discussed about this in the Bhagavatam class. No, we are still want to row the boat, but the anchor is tied to the, you know, sand on the beach. The whole night we keep rowing, but it doesn't go anywhere. So we still want to invest in the material pleasures. Yeah, we can have those days. We have, you know, to start with, we have those days. But we should, if we are sincere, what I want to differentiate between, you know, who is, how would a sincere person do versus a person who is not sincere? A person who is sincere, what he would do is, okay, I know this goal, I want to go there, right? So he would not invest more in those low pleasures or low tastes. He would not consciously invest. He knows the subtle tastes are there inside, right? But he would not inflame them. He would not encourage them. He would not, it's like this, yeah, he will not fan that. He will just let it there and slowly the flame will turn off after some time. Because you're not feeding the, they say we have two dogs in our body, a good dog and bad dog. So that whichever dog you feed, that dog becomes stronger. Whichever dog you starve, that dog becomes weaker. So we have good qualities, bad qualities. So if we nourish the bad qualities, they become stronger and that becomes our character. But if we nourish good qualities, that becomes our character. So similarly, you know, if we, whatever tastes we have and desires we have, if we cultivate them and think about them, you know, always fascinate about them or rather, always think about, you know, how to make this so-called desires fulfilled, think about all the time, then we are investing more in that. But if you always think, you know, okay, I have that, I know that's not going to be beneficial to me, I'm not going to worry about it now, but I would rather think about, you know, how I can progress in my spiritual life. I want to invest there. You know, how, you know, what is my roadmap to come to 16 rounds? What's my roadmap to take initiation? You know, how I can bring my family together? What is, if you start thinking like this, then slowly those tastes will go away and, you know, with Krishna's mercy we can get higher taste. So we should not invest. So one another practical example is given. It's like, you know, if suppose we have an unwanted guest in our home, especially Indrajit Maharaj gives this example all the time. Some father-in-law, mother-in-law comes which you don't like. So they say, you know, they come and they stay. They say next day morning they come and say, you know, Mataji, what is for breakfast? Oh, breakfast? Oh, you know, today we are fasting, there is no breakfast. Oh, what about lunch? No, lunch also, you know, we are going on Sankirtan, you know, somewhere there we'll eat. What about dinner? No, nothing is there. Like the 2-3 days, if you say, you know, the guest will run away after some time. It's like we starve them basically, you know, all this lust and anger and greed. We don't feed them more, but we starve them. We don't invest in them. Then they slowly die away with the potency of devotional service. So like that. So any more difficulties? Anybody wants to share? What is it? No, we should all analyze ourselves. Are we making progress as much as we want? No. as much as we would like, you know, then if at all not, then you know, what is it blocking me, you know, is it maybe, you know, if everything is good, then maybe am I committing offenses to devotees? No, then who can help me? Who can see what mistakes I'm making? No, other than my husband, can somebody watch what I'm doing and tell me? Like that, or no? What else? I want you all to share. You know, what all things could block? One is this desire, sankar.
You said that we need to starve the lust and things, but the difficulty is we don't know how to communicate with those things to starve, to make them starve.
Yeah, I can give an example. Like every Saturday you to take Bhagavata class, right? I wanted to come, but somehow or the other, my kid wants me to come to his yoga class. In the morning, Prabhuji wants me to go to the yoga class. So by the time I come, I have to give bath and everything, and I have to go to yoga class. So it's not happening. So how can I manage all the things and come to the Bhagavata class? So we can't. Like, it's like, I feel like viola class is like a material thing, but it's still like...
So yeah, actually it's a very important point, you know, that's very good, it ties into the today's theme actually, you know. If you want to take home, everything is based on our desire actually, you know, everything. It's all about how intense is your desire. Because the everything, the way it works, even in the material world, it's all happening because of our desire. As we told, right, the body we get, you know, the family members we get, you know, whatever happens, it's all because of our desires. So even in devotional service, based on our desire, Krishna will reciprocate accordingly. You know, even if sometimes seemingly impossible situation, if you have a strong desire, and if the desire is selfless and desire is only to please Krishna, it's going to manifest automatically. No, or rather, you know, magically, mystically. You should have faith in this. I have the experience with this. That's why I'm able to tell with some faith. So, you know, that's what it is. Very nice. Okay, that brings about one nice incident with Srila Prabhupada. So, Srila Prabhupada came to one city, some place, and he gave class, lectures, everything, you know, and then he was going, departing. So, he came to his car and he was sitting. So, one devotee was following, attending all morning mocks, everything, but he didn't ask any question. He was a quiet devotee. But then suddenly when Srila Prabhupada started sitting in his car, he just ran and then he tried to make space and went to Srila Prabhupada and he asked one question, very, very fundamental question. He asked, Srila Prabhupada, what does it take for one to become Krishna conscious? What does it take to become Krishna conscious? A very, very fundamental question, right? So what Radhanath Maharaj gave a very nice lecture on, basically elaborating on the answer Srila Prabhupada gives, he gave a whole lecture on this. The lecture name is Cultivating Proper Desires. I hear this often again and again, so that's how I remember the title. So then, in that Maharaj elaborates, Srila Prabhupada could have replied with a sloka, he could have replied with some verses, he could have replied with some statement, he could have replied with some paragraph, he could have replied with few phrases, but he replied with one word. That word,
desire.
That word, he said with that word is so deep that his everything sets on based on that. Actually, the whole material existence is because of the desire to enjoy separate from the Lord. And he said in 15th chapter, this banyan tree, that whole material creation is described as a inverted banyan tree. It's inverted. Usually, you know, tree is inverted in water. If you see in water, the tree is reverse. So this banyan tree, material creation, is inverted from the real tree, which is in spiritual world. And where is it reflected? The reflection is desire. The water in which the tree reflects, the reflection is our desire. The water of that which causes the reflection is desire. So if the desire is correct, then the tree becomes right. Got it? Because the desire is perverted, we are seeing inverted tree. Okay, if you don't understand the tree example, it's okay. But it's all reflected based on our desire. So if we desire to enjoy, that's why, you know, we are suffering. If we desire to serve, we'll be happy and we'll not be frustrated. It's all our desire. So in Krishna consciousness, even in this thing, you know, if you are really serious, if you are really sincere, if you are really earnest, if you are really eager, no, that this is my life. Other than going to this class, my life is useless. What am I doing? Krishna, pray or beg, everything, you just see how it works out. If it's not happening, means you don't have strong desire. And for some people, it may happen, no? See, that's for some people, it's so easy, you know, for Navya, she doesn't have a choice. Many times, you know, she may have desires to go somewhere else, but, you know, she knows Mataji will catch me, you know, she will, so she doesn't have a choice, you know. For some people, I don't know, she's fortunate, unfortunate, she doesn't have a choice. So, you know, I already trapped her by cutting her ear, so. No, but if it happens like that, you know, even if I don't desire, it's happening. That means some point I had that strong desire to take up Krishna consciousness, or even now I have the sincere desire to take up Krishna consciousness. But don't take it for granted. If at all, any time you slacken in your desire, opportunity will go away like anything. Or rather, Maya will invite you for some other conference somewhere, or, you know, some other enticing program somewhere where, you know, you feel anyway. Every week I meet Ian Mataji and recorded lectures are there. You know, so it's okay, you know. So it's always there. So it's all about desire. So we should always, please hear that lecture, Cultivating Proper Desires. It's very, you know, crucial for, you know, how to, what should we desire for, what should be our desire and how intensely should we desire. See, it's all, you know, the way Prabhupada established ISKCON, all these things, how he preached, right? It's all a sincere desire that he wants to serve a spiritual master. And that's what the whole thing manifested, right? And even like, you know, I was reading Lilamrita where he was said, Bhavari, he, Jhansi also, he's tried to set up League of Devotees. And he sent up, you know, for League you set some bullet points, you know, this is what the League does. And he created that memorandum, whatever it is, and got signature, all those things. That didn't work out. He came to US and same thing, initial beginning, but within 1 year only, some people started inclined. Then he said, okay, let's start International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Everybody was like, what is this? Oh, maybe he wants some, you know, non-profit funds. That's why he's registering agency. Who will join this movement? Nobody understood. Nobody is initiated. There were just some people who are inclined. Some lawyer came who wanted to help Prabhupada. So he brought him and he said, you know, these are the points for this ISKCON. You read out and let get signatures. So people who are coming day to day, you know, casually, they wrote signatures saying, you know, we are the, who was that people? We are board members for this year, next year we are board members, next year we are board, 3 years board members are elected from those people. They are not in it, nothing, no commitment for them. They thought it's a casual fun, but no, Prabhupada had this desire that, you know, this is going to set the future. No, this International Society of Krishna Consciousness, he can see the future, you know. This is going to attract a lot of people and this is going to make pure devotees and this is what is his desire, this is what he wanted. And if you hear, whatever is happening now, like, you know, all the centers being opening everywhere and so many things. If you see actually all Prabhupada disciples, they are just reading, most of them, they are reading through Prabhupada's lectures everywhere where he expressed his desires and they are fulfilling these desires. He said, no, I want Vedic Planetarium. Now there is multi-year project being done to establish Vedic Planetarium in Mayapur. So Amrish Mahar Prabhu is dedicating his life to fulfill that instruction of Srila Prabhupada gave to him. So it's just fulfilling his desires. Because one pure devotee, Prabhupada, desired for Krishna, everything is happening. Imagine. So like that, you know, if we have become pure and if you have pure desires for preach Krishna consciousness or establish Krishna consciousness, things are going to happen. Like that, you know. And if you have desire, you know, sincerely to hear, it's going to happen. One practical example I can share is like, yeah, I didn't think about it, but it's coming. Like, we had, of course, we have twins, right? You know that. So, first year, last year, when every year our teacher Radhakrishna Prabhu, he comes. He comes once a year to teach our Bhakti Vaibhav. We are doing Bhakti Vaibhav course. So, he stays for 1 hour, 1 month or 1.5 months. There we have weekdays, 7 to 9 evening classes. And weekends we have almost like morning 10 to like, you know, 2 or 4 4 hours. Like, we sit and just study. Like all, maybe 20 of us are like that. We studied Bhakti Gita, Bhagavad Gita under him. Like that, year after year. We finished that and then we got degrees and we are now sharing that with you and now we are doing Bhakti Vaibhav with him, like that. So, but then in the meantime, I had pregnancy and then I think when I was carrying 7th month, he came. So, I attended all the classes that time. I was just carrying, so it was easy. And next year, they were just like, you know, 5 months or something when he came, 6 months. My mother-in-law was there, but so much I had desire, but somehow I attended first class, I really wanted to attend. But then they said, because it's difficult, they don't even listen what especially we have 2 kids, right, and become cranky and sometimes they want only mother, all those things. So they said, you know, better not go. So then I thought, okay, I cannot go now. So that's fine. I'll listen to recordings like that. But next year, this year when he came, January he came. Some of 1 month before only I started praying, you know, oh Krishna, really I want to attend, you know, this is my life, I really want this for me. Can you please, I don't know how, but whole day is already full, I know, the way we were dealing with the day, it was already full, packed up. So where will I get this 2 hours, and how, and that time I feed kids and put them to rest, how will it work out? I didn't know all that. I just wanted to pray, you know, somehow I want to attend, you know, somehow give me that opportunity. Then I don't know what happened. I think first day Prabhu said, okay, you attend, we have to feed kids 2 times before so that they eat enough, so they don't wake up in the middle. So first slot Prabhu said you feed first slot and you go by 6:30, you know, like for example now 6:30 we start feeding, 7 o'clock they are done. I can go attend the class and come back by 8:30, feed the next and then put them to sleep. Usually 8:30 feeding, put them to sleep, it becomes very late because they just would have eaten. By the time they sleep, it's tough. So first day it became, and already they're little grown up, they always want mother now. So first day it was dramatic actually. When the time I came, they were about to puke and all those things, and Prabhu almost, I was scared. He was almost saying, you know, maybe you don't go. Somehow what happened miraculously, Praveen Prabhu, Navya Mataji's husband, he said, you know, why don't you feed the kid so Mataji can attend fully, you know, we can help Mataji. And Mataji also told, you know, we want our teacher to learn something new, so you go attend, I will take care of your, you know, feeding, at least, you know, we'll see. So then she started helping whole month, every weekday, every day she used to come and feed the second slot. And then I used to just come, attend full class. I used to just come, and by the time they ate, they just roam around, they are ready to sleep. Then I come at 9, 9:10, and they are ready, I change the diaper, put them to sleep. That's all. Whole day, I didn't even miss one class. It was so, I was so satisfied and so grateful for them actually. So much I said, so many times, repeated this, and I told Radhakrishna Prabhu also. So definitely, you know, they are going to get the blessings, whatever mercy. Because Krishna sees the attitude. It doesn't matter, they are serving me, they don't get benefit, but because they are doing it as service to Krishna, right? So they are going to get benefit with that, for that. But see how it happened, right? It's all because of the desire. If we have that strong desire, sincere desire, and you know, intense desire, that this is my life. So one another incident is there, see, always we run out. One another incident is there, one, we'll end with the story. So one guru, this guru and that Maya, Matin, Maya story, right? Like that. One guru is there. So one disciple is very casual. Says, oh, Guru Maharaj, you know, I think it's time. It's been 3 years now. I think it's time for me to get initiated. No, why don't you, you know, give me a name? No, let's think about, you know, when we should have fire yagya. Oh, okay, let's see. Okay, then he said, okay, let's see, you know, this day, why don't we go for, you know, some boat pastime, or rather water or something, you know, let's go. So then he went somewhere and he doesn't know swimming. So something happened that the disciple had to fall in water. Then he's saying, you know, he was struggling hard for air, you know, he's drowning. Then he's coming up, clasping, like, oh, save me. Then somehow, you know, he lifts him up a little bit. Then he breathes some air. Then, oh, okay, I got life. Then he leaves him down again. He goes down. And he's like, oh, struggling. Then again lifts him. Okay, I got life. Then he goes down again. Then he picks him up again and comes and takes him out and he says, you know, when you came up for 1 minute, how much you wanted that air? No, he said, you know, I wanted that air as much as my life, you know. I knew without that air, I'm going to die. I had that intense desperation for that air. He said, okay, with that intense desperation, you want initiation, then you come to me. Otherwise, don't come. So he says, you know, that intensity of, you know, without initiation, without my mercy of my spiritual master, without, I'm not going to make progress. It's not a casual affair. Like, oh, I chant, hey, what is this, 4 regulative principles I'm following, 16 rounds I'm doing, what? It's just a formality. I'll just go there and wear a nice sari, you know, silk sari, then sit in, I'll wear a garland. No, it's not about all this. Initiation is the commitment of the heart. Right? So with that intensity, we should seek spiritual life. No, it's spiritual. At least we are fortunate. So many things are there for us to choose from. We should be morose, like, you know, if there are no classes are happening. Luckily for us now, when our time, they were not so much. Radhakrishna Prabhu had to come from Houston to conduct Bhagavad Gita classes for us. You know, but here we have so many, of course, we are not so potent, but at least we are trying to repeat as much as. No, but there's so many groups happening, so many, you know, so many opportunities are there. No, the question is, do we have desire? Do we have intense desire? Do we have sincere desire? So if we have that desire, like how Krishna's will manifest, our desires will manifest. Okay, I think we can end here. Just stop. Jai, all glory Srila Prabhupada.